let the mind be completely quiet and try and follow this in quietness only. Don't make any intellectual efforts over it. The what we may call the positive masculine creative energy of the universe acts in flashes, in separate quanta of energy, as the scientist would say. That is to say, it acts in this fashion. And each pulse is complete in itself. It is the entire story. There is no question of continuity or of the deliberate working out of a purpose involved in it. It is creative. It does not care in the sense that we human beings care. It has no longings, no desires. It just is like that. Positive, masculine. It doesn't measure. There is no time involved in it. By contrast with that is the feminine negative aspect of life. This tends to flow along like a river in which is involved continuity. One part of the water touches the other part of the water. They keep together, they flow along. It seems as if purpose is involved in it, certainly growth is involved in it, and maintaining, preserving, nurturing, and continuing is involved in it. The positive masculine is destructive regenerative without thinking at all. This stream tries to catch hold of that positive part to preserve it. It is fertilizing, that positive part is fertilizing in its nature. This negative part holds it, keeps it. The positive part has no dimensions, remember. It's timeless, it's spaceless, it's quantityless, it's immeasurable, it's not finite. The negative introduces finitude. And life in its wholeness, as we humans can understand it and be at one with it in its fullness, displays the two together all. It is utterly impossible for us, as part of the life stream, to separate the two. I cannot hold finitude in one hand and infinity in the other. Now, this pulsing is life, death in its incomprehensible ultimateness. But the stream of life is what we can experience and see, and of which we form a part, displays the rhythm of birth, death. Feel this carefully. In that positive life, death, death and life are inseparable. They are identically one and the same. You can't form a concept about it. It's totally impossible to form a concept, therefore. But this birth-death rhythm can be conceptualized simply because we see in our ordinary everyday existence the phenomenon of birth, growth, death. Time is involved in this. That is the timeless. Now, these two aspects are wonderfully embodied in us individually. All individual existence, therefore, holds within itself that which is a basic conflict. Until there is the full flowering of individuality, a flowering which actually is inconceivable, though we may use words about it. When that full flowering takes place through the individual, then there is no longer that basic conflict, that conflict between the positive and the negative, between the masculine and the feminine. Now, this flowering may be put in these terms. These are just my own terms. You must consider them and deal with them just as you think fit. This flowering of individuality is the release of the phenomenon of complete wholeness in the limited and the finite, in complete relationship to the totality and not separate from it. This is the flowering of individuality. Now, the mistake, as I see it, which has been made through the ages, is that people have tried to conceptualize this flowering of individuality, form a definite picture of it, and then lay down steps, methods, a path, etc., to obtain the conceptualized picture, which is absurd. Because my conceptualized picture now, in my imperfect state, is necessarily and invariably the wrong picture. And if I am working for the wrong picture, I may have the doubtful delight of realizing the wrong picture, but it won't be true. I can't go to God and put down my tuppenny halfpenny specie and pick up something and come away thinking I've got the goods, it'll always be the wrong stuff that I've come away with. So now, the very important thing we have to realize here is that in the process of our living, and in that process is involved what we call our development and flowering, there is inevitably this breaking up process by virtue of the pulsation of the positive. Every one of us is male-female. Preponderantly male in the case of the male organism, preponderantly female in the case of the female organism. But we have both aspects in us. And curiously enough, in both males and in females, we tend to be female out of fear of the breaking up process, of the letting go process. We want to preserve because we believe that is safe. But our concept of safety is intimately tied up. In fact, not only concept, but the actual feeling of safety is inevitably tied up and intimately tied up with continuity, with preservation of what is known, of what is usually already done with, which is dead, putrefying. This is the trouble. When that supreme creative energy of the universe does this, and there's death, sweeps the whole slate clean, completely clean, you see? That energy has no fear, no concern. It is omnipotently creative. And it doesn't wait for anything. Now, our task is to fall in rhythm with it, be in rhythm with it. Members of the orchestra playing in time as well as in tune. This is not easy. Consider how our whole life our whole life is oriented round preservation, safety, comfort, and what we call enjoying the evening of our life in peace. This is not living. But this is what we call good, whereas that positive pulse, which breaks up everything that we do and everything that we want preserved, is called evil. Now you see, the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil has been terribly misinterpreted. It is what has been called evil, which is this positive energy pulsing. It's the divine creative energy. Whereas that which wants to preserve and keep and continue and accumulate the heap of corpses of the putrefying dead stuff has been called the good. the safe, the fearful. The one which shies away from life and new emergence, which is fundamentally the supreme purpose, if you like, of the life process. New emergence. We try to hold back new emergence. But if we understand that this which has been called evil is really the realization of this omnipotent, positive, creative activity of the ultimate, it means then that if we do eat of the fruit, we have invited the supreme, the ultimate, right into our very being. Therefore the new emerges. But that emergence can take place only in terms of the complete dissolution of all that is attempted to be preserved. We haven't learned how to let go at the right moment. This is the point. We don't know anything about letting go at the right moment. Anything, everything. Why don't we let go at the right moment? What are the forces behind that? Ignorance to start with, we are ignorant of all these things. Fear, greed, spinelessness, and ambition, false objectives built up by thought, serving desire. Thought, as we call it, which is incapable of being thought in the real sense. Thought in the real and supreme sense is this pulsing creative energy. By which the word becomes flesh. So you see, right within ourselves, there is this perpetual conflict going on, unbeknown to us. And it is the thing that breaks us down, wears us down through our life very much. No, quicker is not quite the right word. It's not a question of time. It wears us down in the manner of one who has failed to do the job. The numberless millions who have been born and on this globe, the vast bulk of them are unquestionably failures. We must start off with a complete understanding and acknowledgement of the fact. Never mind all the psychological talk about, oh, you'll get an inferiority complex. Better to realize that I am inferior than to fiddle about with getting rid of inferiority complexes. Yes, I am inferior. That is the fact. I see it. There. Not merely acknowledge it out of false modesty. But I see the fact. This is so. Right. And if I do really see this is the fact that it is so, the obstruction disappears. This is very important. I dare say, when Catholic theology talks about we being miserable sinners, if they understood it this way, they would have a true understanding. There'd be something positive, something which they could really work upon, instead of all the twaddle that they produce. Now, if you can really get this right inside you, this pulsing activity, life-death, then you will realize, you will make real what I've said over and over again about death. Death is the perfecter, the consummator, the fulfiller, the one that finishes in perfection. And it is the same as life. Identically the same. That death, alive, is the resurrector. And the resurrection is always in terms of perfection, the flawless, the faultless, in complete and utter freedom. The freedom which is a reality with us when we are totally free of any desire to hold back, to keep continuing as before, business as usual. Now look, if you can really get hold of this, whenever you do get hold of it, the whole problem of your joy and sorrow psychologically is completely out of the picture. It's vanished. There is only nirvana. Pleasure, pain, which belongs to the physical organism as such, because the very continuance of the physical organism necessitates that the pleasure-pain mechanism will function properly. You see? Pleasure-pain will be there. It might be overpoweringly hot today and impossible to endure cold winds tomorrow and so forth. So the pleasure-pain thing will go on. But the joy-sorrow aspect, the psychological reactions will be completely out. And that understanding of the liberated mind means that you are in the kingdom of heaven. Nirvana is realized here and now through you. But we must awaken to the understanding of these fundamental things. Now be careful understanding of them, which is quite different from the intellectual formulation of them. If you have a very good brain, it's going to be a drawback to you. Because having a very good brain, it is very easy for you to make a lovely intellectual formulation of it. I speak from rather bitter experience here. You see, it's quite easy to do that. And to get deceived. Now I know. And that is the misfortune, that now I know.
Amber brings something that is very applicable here, if I may just draw attention to it. She speaks about the qualities necessary in the particular Zen school in which she has been trained, and she gives three qualities: faith, doubt, and courage or determination. And with doubt, she points out that it isn't only doubt of the teachings per se, but doubt of what you fondly imagine you have realized.
Exactly. That is always there. Well, we touched upon this last Saturday, you remember. We touched upon this. That we think that, oh, we have seen. We have really seen, understood in the profound sense. That is not the case. So now, let understanding emerge. By letting thought be quiet, by letting all past knowledge and accumulated experience not interfere with the living process here now in the instant of growing into full awareness of this positive and negative interplay, this male-female interplay. Now, you remember last time when we tried out this meditation process. You remember the subject matter of it? We tried first to just look at our own self, see our own face, and we found it extremely difficult to see our own face in our mind's eye. You see? And after we went through all that, then we brought up in front of us the other person, as we call it. Call him or her. You see? The other person. And we did this in connection with the whole question of relationship, because all our life is relationship. I've been meditating quite a bit over that, what we did last time we met here. And what I've tried to suggest today, put forward today, is to help us to see ourselves as a whole and to realize that there is this conflict inside, and it is because of this conflict the eyes won't see straight and look at oneself and recognize one's own face. Yes.
But it was not a whole thing. It was two separate things, which to see them whole without interference.
When there is the understanding of the whole, this positive and this negative, the one timeless and unconcerned with continuity, the other concerned with nurturing, preserving and continuing. You see, when one sees, or really sees all that, the whole problem and the associated conflict of accepting and rejecting is out of it. It's not a question of accepting these views. If they are merely views, they are utterly impotent to help. We cannot throw views out for the very simple reason that we cannot communicate with each other at all. We cannot communicate inside our own self without the word and thought and views. our inward communication mechanism involves these particular aspects of the machine. You see? But if they are going to be mere views and mere thoughts, they are impotent to release this living reality which we name wisdom, which we name love, and so forth. This kind of awakening is the sort of thing that means Buddhahood, Christhood, call it what you like. This kind of awakening. Remember, it is an awakening, not I am awakened. There is the awakening. And there is the timelessness of the awakened state. And the timelessness of the awakened state manifests itself through time in every single instant of life. Birth, death in quick succession. Of everyday life, of everyday events, of everyday situations and so forth. So you see this question of accepting a view or rejecting a view and the conflict which it all arouses, all that is out. Now do realize that the pleasure-pain mechanism of physical existence inevitably involves the presence of conflict. But although oneself, the living person, may be completely enveloped by conflict, if there is understanding, one is free of the conflict. It is only because there is self-association with one aspect or other of the conflicting situation that I am in conflict. You get it? Now, also beware of thinking that if I am free of conflict, I am free of pain. No. What I, the living being, the man, distinguished particularly by psyche, in contrast with a stone or a tree or something, you see. What I can be free of is the imbalance within the psyche in any situation and every situation, pleasurable or painful. The pleasure and the pain I shall feel. In fact, I shall feel far more intensely than the insensitive person. It's very important to see clearly the implications of these things. This pleasure drive is so strong in us, so overwhelmingly strong, that unconsciously we relate everything to that as the center. It'll be comfortable, it'll be pleasant, it'll be all right. Our meanings of the words all right and so forth are the wrong meanings all along the line. Because we are caught up in this. One becomes equally free of attachment or aversion with respect to pleasure or pain. The universal process is a process in which, as if each one of us is an instrument for new emergence by the whole world, by the whole universe. It is the world which, the whole world which reaps and sows through each one of us as individuals. The difference between us individuals and dogs or lions or ants or anything like that is simply that we, with the capacity to look inward and outward and relate withinness and withoutness, are capable of deliberately being in harmony with this universal process. That is all. But what obstructs all along the line is our ignorance, our attachment to the pleasure aspect, and so forth. This is why, as we have already tried to see, inwardly in ourselves we are not in proper relationship. The different parts of us are not in proper relationship with each other, and therefore we are not integrated wholes. And the equally great difficulty, we are not in relationship with other people. We cannot be in relationship. To be in relationship involves no task. If there is understanding of this within oneself and the freedom from the pleasure drive, ignorance, the sorrow of ignorance, and so forth, you see, if one is free from all that, if there is this positive-negative playing perfectly, unrestrictedly, like treble and bass playing perfectly together, you see, then there is no problem in relation to an external world, because for you there is no external. The external has vanished. This false division between internal and external is out. It is no longer a case of thou and I. There is only us. I use the singular verb for us. There is only one us. I mean, it's no longer merely an attractive, poetic, aesthetic, intellectual statement. It is a fact. And that is fulfillment. You have really leaped over the pleasure-pain situation whilst living in a body for which the pleasure-pain mechanism is indispensable. The understanding of life is the understanding of the supreme paradox which is presented to man. Man's task is the resolution, not solution of the problem, like you have a problem, you've solved it. That is only a one-sided affair. But the resolution of the thing is to have what were the conflicting elements and which will continue to be and remain as the different elements, but now in a state of harmony and no longer in a state of conflict. It is extremely difficult. Make no mistake about it. We have too many illusions about. Now you see, if you relate this, tie this up with the question which we have over and over again asked in these meetings asked of ourselves, why do we turn to religion? You see, all the false aspect of our drive to religion comes up clearly, and we'll see it. And to be aware of the humbug in myself, the impurity in myself, means that there is purity. Remove the dirt, and the room is clean. Can't put in cleanness. Now, today, try again this business of a relationship. Let us start and spend some time just trying to be aware in ourselves of this dual process, this positive masculine. We call it positive masculine purely for convenience. Whether it is positive or masculine in any sense that we know, of course. But they are just convenient words to suggest one and to suggest another. That is all. This positive masculine thing, which is life-death, a life-death pulsation, in which death is identical with life. This is the point. See? Which creates and wipes out. Creates and wipes out. Just like that. Like a child playing on the seashore, making a sandcastle, and then just with one grand gesture of its hand, the whole sandcastle is down. And the child is in delight. Joy. The bliss of God which passes understanding. That's one aspect of it. Then there is this other one, the one that nurtures and wants to continue and see what we call the care lavished by the feminine aspect. But this care is all thought, is all planned out. As if without that person's care, the living thing wouldn't continue to live. But the mystery is that living things do manage to live despite all carelessness, all thoughtlessness also. We mustn't stretch that too far, mind you. Otherwise there'll be a mess in the world. Now, these two elements are in us. Male, female. Positive, negative. And they're in a state of conflict. Perpetual in a state of conflict. There is ignorance in myself, there is fear, there is greed, the dominance of the pleasure principle, there is desire all the time for the pleasurable, ambition, the vanity, and above all the egoism at play. All these elements. Now, let us spend a few moments letting them appear before the mind's eye. Just let them appear before the mind's eye. If they don't, well, never mind, don't worry. try and be aware particularly of the way in which this feminine element functions as grasping, holding on to things, objects, property, security, ideas, beliefs, see this grasping activity functioning. Call up before the mind's eye all that we grasp at, objects, the house, the car, the pen, the piano, whatever it is. Note how I always think about it as my this, my that, my saucepan, my cooker. My idea. My hands. My tummy, my hair, my eyelashes, goodness knows what. All the my's. Just be aware of the enormity involved with this my. In actual fact, I live and function as if I were the proprietor of the total universe. Grasping, all along the line. My ambitions, my purposes. It's not as if there was just one female inside me functioning, but this female was the total female of the whole of existence, grasping at everything and anything. Do try and see it, not just accept the idea, or reject the idea, or struggle against it. Just let's see the fact. And the associated fear, therefore. My hopes may be destroyed, my expectations unfulfilled, my desires frustrated. See the fear and the anxiety which is inescapably woven in with this grasping. And above all, the fear of death. Death in all its forms. My house being burned down by fire. That is a death. The disruptive aspect of life, my fear of it. Let me notice how I want everything to be thus and thus as I want it to be. If I walk into a room and the picture is a little bit skew, I want to put it exactly straight. If I see a bit of dust on the desk, I want to get rid of it. I can't let the poor dust be. By all means, have a clean desk. But why? How? That is the point. If it is because there has to be a clean desk, all right, dust the desk. But if it is because I don't want the dust to be there, then it's a different situation. I cannot let be. That means lacking freedom in myself, I will take away freedom from someone else or some situation. Become aware of the accumulative side. Everything accumulates. I cannot let go. And when the positive male life-death pulsation comes and sweeps it away, I cry out against an unjust, cruel God. Why should it have happened to me? Is the cry of people. The meaning of my being in a harmonious state is that I do not offer any resistance to what the universal process does through me, quite irrespective of my likes, dislikes, etc. But as and when I see this, really see this, and understand it, and become unresisting, there is the condition of purity. The purification of the mind has taken place. When that happens, the newness, the creatively renewed new moment, new situation, comes out full-fledged, unhindered. And in that is beauty and joy. That positive male energy is utterly spontaneous. It is everlastingly hidden. Its abode is that empty plenitude, the emptiness which is the fullness. They are mere words, always misinterpreted by the clever talker, the skillful thinker. It's only by realization which comes with non-grasping, with real seeing, that the emptiness and plenitude have real meaning. So let the negative, the feminine, be quiet. When the negative and the feminine are quiet, as in the parable in the New Testament, the wise virgin is ready. There is quiet, there is peace. And in the stillness, there will emerge the light of realization, of creative renewal continuously, instantaneously. Perhaps we have touched something of that inner reality. And in the touching, all distinction between inner and outer, a false distinction, is out. There is only the reality, which includes the so-called, the hitherto so-called other person. And the person, as a living person, stands before one. And in that quiet and calmness, there is right relationship. There's no problem of acceptance or rejection. There is only relationship. The fullness of love, which is utterly free of anything even remotely resembling pleasure or pain in that relationship. And this is release. In this state, one cannot harm the other cannot harm one. Because the whole meaning of harm associated with pain and so forth just doesn't hold in this context. And if one is at peace with the so-called other one, one is happy with that other one. The reality of happiness. Now, maybe one can be fully aware of oneself and the other in the deep sense which these words are intended to convey, face to face. The two faces of one total being, the incalculable million faces of one total being. And in this there is no problem of relationship, because relationship is there.